Welcome to the All Wheels Rolling podcast. My name is Mark Hamilton and I'll be your host. We are powered by Bourgeois Midland Nissan. They are part of the Bourgeois Auto Group. You can see their new and used inventory online at bourgeoisnissan.com. The Crank and Sprocket at crankandsprocket.ca for your bicycle needs in Orillia. Excite Physiotherapy at excitephysio.com. Our friends with the rail trail around Simcoe County, cyclesimcoe.ca. SCMBC.ca, which is the Simcoe County Mountain Bike Club, who have heaps of single track all over Simcoe County. BarryCyclingClub.com for your road cycling needs. Today we've got Andrew Watson of Andrew Watson Coaching, AWICoaching.com, just talking about some different things. He has some free webinars on Facebook Live. And yeah, hope you enjoy, folks. Welcome to the podcast. I've got Coach Andrew Watson. Andrew, how are you?
Good. Excellent.
We are early December and you are still riding. You've extended your season south, but not south of the border.
Yep. Just south, about 100K in Toronto. There's no real snow down there. Ground's frozen. So you could theoretically get some good mountain biking in right now.
Nice.
We've just kind of been riding on some bike path type tours. Some city park type stuff, which has been great. So it's been nice to extend the season a little bit. And I did get Zwift fired up and got rollers set up and all that stuff too for this kind of in-between season where the skiing isn't really great right now. And I know they're open, but you know.
Sort of rock season.
Yeah, yeah.
And have you found any good coffee shops, breweries? Have you made it a destination ride at all?
You can't like throw a stone without hitting a brewery, a coffee shop, a croissant store, or we've been exploring a lot, or I've been taking in a lot of Toronto and
nice.
I got like a Presto card, which is like the pub like TTC card. That was a big day.
Uh huh.
Yeah, and so. Which is actually awesome because, like, I grew up on a farm out in the country, and I'm still kind of out in the country, but I'd never taken the TTC before in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've ridden the Tube in London.
Yeah.
But I've never ridden the TTC or, like, public transit before. So it was, now that the pandemic's kind of starting to wane, hopefully, fingers crossed, and we've been taking the TTC downtown and, you know, just, it's great. It's such an awesome way to travel.
Oh, for sure.
Like we went downtown to see a movie theater and just jumped on, you know, the world with parking and driving and it's pretty cool. So
nice.
Yeah, becoming more ingrained in the city culture.
Nice. And so you mentioned Zwift, reasonable to say that people haven't been riding as much in the last month that they have been, say, mid-July. So, first time we hop on Zwift, should we expect the same or better power numbers than what we had, say, July or August?
Oh, it'll probably be not better. it's funny, I was on the BCC Zwift ride last night. I jumped on after a race. And they were kind of talking about the same thing. Like, yeah, they've taken a month off, 6 weeks off, 8 weeks off the bike. And yeah, I just got to kind of reevaluate where your fitness level is. But that's not a bad thing, to detrain a little bit, and, you know, start fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Start anew.
So if someone was training through, let's say we've got someone who wants to hop on rollers, hop on smart train or whatever for the winter. Should they do like a serious evaluation of where their FTP is, let's say at this point in the year, before they jump into a program, either with a coach like you or like a set thing on Zwift or Trainer Road or all those things?
Yes. I wouldn't say a serious, I think a lot of people focus on FTP a lot, like, and it's like, okay, this is this one number, and where is this one number? Is it 250 watts or 256 watts? And, you know, but I always think of it in a range. Like, when I look at an FTP number, I always think plus or minus 15. right? Plus or minus 20, depending on where it is. But so where is it? Where's your ballpark threshold? And yes, it's a good idea to get a good ballpark where your current threshold is. And I'm a great example of that. I haven't ridden much this year.
Yes.
So I'm getting a feel for where my threshold is again. Without even really formal testing, just jumping in a couple Zwift races, I can kind of tell where my threshold is. So, you definitely want to get a feel for where your threshold is, where your whole power duration curve is. So normally when I start with a new athlete, or if an athlete's restarting a new training year or cycle, start with a round of testing over 2 weeks.
Right.
But it's not just FTP. It's 1 minute test, 3 minute test, and then a longer test. Usually get a feel for where all their energy systems are.
Yeah, and I think fair. I'll put myself in this category. Maybe weigh yourself going in to sort of see, because if you've been, let's say, 8 weeks off the bike, your watts per kilo might not be what it was earlier in the summer. I'm beating around the bush. Some of us have put on a few pounds since riding stopped.
Yeah.
Or your own riding season kind of slowed.
I'm there. So it's, if it's not a bad idea to do those check-ins. I'm not always a huge proponent of weigh yourself every day.
No. Right?
But if once a week, once every 2 weeks, it's not a bad idea. Maybe if you are doing some Zwift and want to get a good idea of where your power weight is, get that check-in with where that metric is.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about this before, I think, but what other things like strength training, let's say, would you recommend to people sort of going into? I know strength training is always a hot topic of what's winter training look like?
Yeah, so glad you asked. Strength training's you can go down a few rabbit holes with strength training, and with everything, I think a coach's job is to try to simplify things as much as possible. But my philosophy on strength training is that it should complement your overall cycling training. If you're a cyclist, if your goal as a cyclist is to ride further or faster or beat a competitor, then strength training has to complement that. But it should never overtake your cycling trainer, at least on the long term. There could be times where in the fall or early winter where maybe it is more dominant in your program. You are doing a little bit more strength training versus aerobic training. I'll just say aerobic training, whether it's cross-country skiing or cycling. But for the most part, especially if you are a time-crunched athlete, you want to make sure that you're still training specifically for cycling and that the strength isn't taking away from that, because it can. You can do too much strength training and you can get strong and you can lift a lot of weight, and that's great. But if it doesn't translate into cycling, then why are you doing it?
Just for an 80s reference, just for, the bulk of the people who listen to this, we don't want to be Pee Wee Herman and turn into Arnie.
Right.
That's not our off-season goal.
No. So a good way, you want to, with strength training, you want to get strong. You want to build strength. You want to lift more. You don't necessarily, as a cyclist, want to put on more mass, more lean muscle mass, unless it really does contribute to your power, which sometimes it doesn't always do that. Sometimes, especially if you're putting muscle mass onto your upper body, and think about how much cyclists worry about their power to weight ratio, right? And then you go into the gym and you start bench pressing and then you put on 5 pounds of upper body muscle. That's not going to help your power to weight ratio. So that can and does happen. So we want to make sure that we're building strength without necessarily going through hypertrophy training. I do have a personal anecdote about that, and definitely seen it with a couple athletes as well. So I tend to do more of a 5x5 type rep and sets. So that we're just working on the strength. We're not necessarily working on that hypertrophy.
So what do you mean by 5x5?
So five sets of five reps.
Okay.
And of a pretty heavy weight, but you're not failing at five. So a weight that you can lift eight, nine, 10 times, but then you stop at five reps.
Okay.
So it does have some mass to it, and that usually puts you in a good ballpark for building strength, but not necessarily putting on too much excess muscle mass.
That's fair. Good. So, but would you recommend just legs, just arms, core? Are we throwing everything at it?
I'd say a little bit of everything. I do like core. I think core is something that you could and should work on year round, even right through your race season. I think at least maintaining core strength. You should definitely be doing some lower body exercises, but the upper body is really important as well for injury prevention. So like as mountain bikers, having really good shoulder stability can help with those crashes and those bails when we're throwing your arms out and risking separating shoulders and things like that. That's where having some upper body strength can really pay dividends and upper body conditioning. And that's how I really think of strength is like we do strength as cyclists, or again, this is my philosophy, this is my opinion, but we do strength to become better all-around athletes and just better, healthier, more able-bodied people is why we do it. So that we're not just bike riders. But we just want to be careful of going too far down that strength rabbit hole.
So the expression sometimes, I have recently gone back to the gym, so I've seen some of these folks, they're very much happy to wear the tank top because they are super heavy up top, but definitely jogging pants because they don't want you to see how many leg days they've missed.
Right.
Opposite probably for a lot of cyclists, got a lot of leg strength.
Yep.
Maybe don't spend a whole bunch of time on core. Why is core important if I've got strong legs?
The best analogy that I ever heard was you can't shoot a cannon out of a canoe. And if you want to put down force through a pedal, you have to brace your core. That doesn't come from nowhere. As on a bike, whether you're in a road position or a mountain bike position, that you still have to brace your core to be able to push that force down through the pedal. So that's why the core is really important. And it does help with things like lower back pain. It's not the only reason you have lower back pain, but that's a big reason for sure. Is it stabilizes. You think about a mountain bike and mountain bike racing or downhill, and think about your arms are moving, your legs are moving, your whole body's moving, but that core is, as the name entitles, that's where everything's, you know, transferring through. So how your arm helps you pedal faster, even in a sprint, there's some upper body movement in there that gets transferred through your core.
I sat in a session, I think you did too, with Doc Rocca.
Mm-hmm.
About core strength and what the movements look like for an elite athlete, engaged versus not engaged, and it was quite telling.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I've done a few like core assessments, and where again, like we talk about cyclists and pushing a lot of power and this and that, but then, you know, somebody comes in or it's like, can they do a plank for 20 seconds without shaking? Right, they don't have to hold a plank for 10 minutes or anything like
sure.
that. You probably shouldn't actually. There's, you know, but you know, just can you do a side plank for 20 or 30 seconds without shaking?
Yeah,
and you know, there can be just some low hanging fruit there with that core, and that's why again I think core is good. Like a little bit of core, you know, actually every day is going to help maintain that stability. But yeah, some of the stuff that Doc Rocca has you know shown us, and you know you look at it and you're like, oh, that's kind of easy, but then he makes you okay, you got to do this. No, you did it wrong. And it's like, whew, okay. And then yes. you feel like you did a workout and you didn't even do anything.
Yes.
Right? You didn't you didn't really even move much and it felt like a workout. So
yeah,
I love that stuff. The I know he hates the term, but the very functional stuff. The, you know, not necessarily with a weight all the time or something with a lightweight. But if we go back to just like lifting weights, and doing a squat or doing a one arm a row or shoulder press or things like that, I do think that the most important part of that is just doing it, just picking up something that has some mass to it and lifting it or pushing it or pulling it, whatever the exercise may be. That's going to be better than not doing it. But as cyclists, just do the thing, but don't necessarily worry about it. Especially if you have limited time to work out, you know, make sure that you're prioritizing that in the right way, right. And for your whole season and things like that. But
We're preaching the choir here. Somewhat important to get a coach to help you with some of these things, or just
yeah, absolutely. I think, and the best thing a cycling coach can do or should do is make sure that you're periodizing it correctly. So you're doing the strength the right time of year or in your training cycle, making sure that when it's go time that you really are making sure that you're putting the work in on the bike, because that's what's going to make you a good bike rider is the on the bike work. That's 95% of our training. We are, unless you're a track sprinter or something like right. that. Like if we're endurance cyclists, so if we're road racers, cyclocross, time trialists, it's an aerobic sport. And the big limiting factors are delivering oxygen to our muscles and our muscles utilizing that oxygen. It's not necessarily, strength is rarely a huge limiter in endurance sport. We're trying to train those other things and making sure those are topped up.
And I know we've talked about this subject, I think, with you before as well. So when you're selecting a coach or interviewing a coach to see if they're the right one for you, communication is important, goal setting is important. Have those discussions with your coach of what your end game is so that they can give you the roadmap
yeah.
to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. And also fact, like, and when I'm evaluating strength in a cyclist or how much strength to use, there's several different things at play. And that's why sometimes it depends. So that's usually the answer to so many questions that I see. well, it depends.
Yeah.
But age is definitely a factor. Age of the athlete, their natural body type. Some athletes put on muscle really easily and quickly. Some will never put on muscle. They're ectomorph and mesomorph, and some of that stuff's been debunked a little bit. But we know the people, they're kind of tall and lengthy, and they can probably do all the strength training in the world that they won't really put on a much muscle.
Right.
Right. And then there's other people that look at a weight plate in the gym and they put on muscle. So where you fit into that spectrum is important, as well as a cyclist and how that fits into your year. What's your access to strength equipment? Is it just at home? Is it very basic? Do you go to a gym? Has your gym been closed for the past 2 years with COVID? So you want to make sure that if you're going to be doing heavy back squats, you got to make sure you're safe. So you want to have a good squat rack. So making sure, what do you have access to, so I'm not going to give somebody back squats if they don't have squat rack. We'll figure something else out.
Sure.
But
I think you highlighted a good point of sometimes just your own body weight can be enough to make your arm shake or your leg shake. There's, we're very much with cyclists, our legs are used to going one direction. Try moving them in other directions, you'll feel it.
If I bookmark that, and yes. then if I also said too that I'm also a big fan of at certain times of the year or in training are those power movements, so jumps and throws. plyometrics. I think those are huge for cycling, and for I think that can play a big role as well. Again, you know, do you have access to equipment? Do you have a medicine ball and a wall that you can throw it against? You know, some of those kind of practical considerations, and playing with those throughout the year can have a very good positive impact on just somebody being a more rounded athlete than just lifting weights. So the speed of movement is really important as cyclists, especially, you know, sprinters and things like that. That's how we produce power on the bike. It's how hard we push on the pedal and how fast that pedal's going around, force times velocity. And there are also proxies for on the bike strength workouts. Like, there are some workouts on the bike that you can work on some adaptations, like stomps and power starts, force reps, really big gear accelerations from a low start speed. Those are other ways that you can target some of those adaptations while on the bike as well. And you want to kind of transition into those from the gym as well, so that you are putting down power on the bike.
And a bit of a thing that I don't love, but I know I need to do, playing with cadence, like really low cadence, go to the high cadence, if that's wherever your comfort zone is not, get out of your comfort zone.
Exactly. That's a huge thing with the, whenever I onboard a new athlete, one of the things I do is I look at how fast they're pedaling. And there's no real right or wrong. Actually, you know what? There is a right or wrong. especially when you come, and I'll say it for a reason, like depending on your discipline, your sport. So if you're a time trialist, you might get away with a really low RPM. You might be okay with it being a grinder and 75, 80 RPM. If that's what you want to time trial at, that'll probably work, especially on flatter time trials.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be a mountain bike racer or a cyclocross racer, you have to be able to pedal fast. You have to be able to accelerate, because that's going to help you accelerate over around corners and up short little steep climbs. If you're in a really big gear, you just won't be able to react to changes in the course or the terrain or those kinds of things. So it is a factor for sure. So I always do look at, you know, where's the comfort zone for this person. And sometimes you can tell they ride in such a narrow gap. You can, you know, see that in a cadence histogram, like a bar chart, and get them out of that. So if they're really comfortable as a grinder, I make sure that they're good at coordinating and get them, you know, working on 100, 110 RPM on rollers if they can. And vice versa, if they're naturally a bit of a spinner, then I'd get them to do low RPM work as well, which helps, and that really helps build muscular endurance. And, you know, especially going from indoor to outdoors, or going to a training camp down south or in the mountains or in Spain, wherever, making sure that you can climb and not, you know, wreck your knees right away. So if you've been spinning on rollers at 95 RPM all winter, and then all of a sudden you go down and you're grinding and you run out of gears and you're doing 10% mountain climbs for half an hour, that's going to put a stress on your knees, and it's not, you know, I've been there, trust me. And, you know, we've seen it in camp too. When we go down with athletes, it's like 3 days in, their knees are sore because they haven't been conditioned to take that load.
You reposted a video very recently, our friend Brody Sanderson at Pan Ams.
Mm-hmm.
And in his commentary, when he was going around, he said it a few times in his video. He's like, ooh, got to pick the right gear here. This could be, if you pick the wrong gear... And
absolutely,
just when you said that, immediately popped to mind Brody doing that.
Yeah, and that can work. That can be work both ways. But normally, it's making sure you're in a light enough gear you can transition to something. So making sure that you're not caught off guard and coming up a rise and you're not in the right gear and you get bogged down having a good healthy cadence and being comfortable at that. One of the common ones, I was doing a consult with someone and they were like, well, my heart rate goes up. It's like, well, okay. You know, that's okay. Get used to it.
Yeah.
Right. Like your heart rate's going to be higher if you ride at a higher RPM, especially if you're not used to that, but that's okay. Like,
yeah.
Work on that. Having a little bit higher heart rate isn't the end of the world.
Yeah.
In a workout, it's not just about having the lowest heart rate.
Yeah.
You know, for the highest power, that works inside on a trainer or on rollers, but sometimes when you go outside, it's not that effective.
Yeah. Just a reminder for everybody. So if we're back on Zwift or whatever platform you're using, should we just be racing?
Why are you looking at me?
No, well, you're the only one in the room. So,
Lando's here. No. Well, I'd say if you just enjoy Zwift racing and that's what you enjoy doing, then maybe. I race too much, and that's like I wasn't poking you there. Or go in too many races. But yeah, generally, if you can limit Zwift racing to a couple times a week, and also think of that as one of your intensity workouts. I think that's how you have to look at it. If you're doing workouts and Zwift racing, and like that's just a lot of intensity. But throwing in the odd Zwift race for intensity is good. I like that. I like the informal intensity that comes from Zwift racing, and it's also a good way sometimes to get some testing done. And some people, they love racing, they love pushing themselves in a group, and but they hate doing a long 30-minute power test. Well, you find a race that's gonna fit that mold and get them to do that, and usually they'll get a pretty good power number out of it. So I use it that way as well.
Sorry, and I should have asked the question a little differently. Should you just be racing for your training? Should racing be the only thing you do training-wise for your winter?
No.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
You'll eventually plateau, especially with if you use the example of Zwift racing. And I did it one winter. I just raced like almost every day. And I got like pretty fit doing it. But then I just leveled out. Because I wasn't really training anymore. I wasn't training any specific system. I was just racing. So I got good at that. I got good at starting fast, settling in a group. You know, if there was a punchy climb, I got good at going up that one punchy climb. But I wasn't really progressing. So because I wasn't training. I wasn't targeting energy systems. So training is about, in my opinion, is about targeting energy systems. So targeting your lactate system, targeting your max aerobic power system is what's going to drive improvement. So, and racing will get you so far. But I also think, like, I like to think of racing as also being the final cherry on the top of the whole training year or training system. So you train, you go through your periodized training, you do base build, you know, whatever system you want to use. You target those systems individually. So if I'm targeting the lactate power system, so think 60-second intervals, I'm going to target that with an athlete for 2 to 4 weeks. And that's going to be their intensity for 2 to 4 weeks. So I'm going to do the exact same workout, but I'm going to target that piece of their energy systems. And then rest. And then it might move on to max aerobic power. And then I'm going to target that for a few weeks and then rest. And then let the racing and, you know, Zwift racing or if we're outside, you know, doing the early season racing, let that kind of bring everything together. Is that I like racing for that. I don't like building workouts that necessarily like simulate racing. And I see right. that a lot. It's like, well, this is what a race is like. And it's like, okay, but it's all over the place. It's all over the map. Like it's targeting different energy systems. And I like to use racing in lieu of those workouts. So my workouts are you know, basic. They hit an energy system. But I try not to combine energy systems in one workout.
And I think that's a good way to keep it fun because some of us, like me, struggle to spend a whole winter on the trainer. So if my one workout is a race.
Yeah.
Then it's a fun, hard, fun air quotes,
yep.
A hard effort, and I'm getting kind of a two-in-one. I'm getting some fun while I'm blowing my brains out.
Absolutely, and that's how, again, like work, you know, talk to your coach, talk to a coach, consult with a coach. It depends on the athlete, because some athletes I work with that they just don't like Swift racing. They just don't like it, but they love training. So they're not really going to do, they just, you know, they might do a Zwift race.
Right.
Some athletes really, really love it, but and that's where, okay, like you almost negotiate a little bit. And you're like, okay, like one Zwift race a week.
Yes.
And then you can be selective with the Zwift race as well. Like they have lots of different distances. So the courses are very different. So I usually go on and I'll go to the calendar and see what's up for that day, and I'll give them some suggestions for it so that they're not just doing a 100K Zwift race.
Right.
And, you know, they're okay. What's, there's a few courses that I really like on Zwift for racing. And
do you want to name drop them?
Yeah. I love the, I think they call the Innsbruck flat course, okay, air quotes, because it's pretty flat, except it has this one 50 to 60 second leg snapper in it.
Okay.
Where it is just like all out to the top of this, like it's a 1 minute all out effort every 8 or 9K.
Okay.
So I really like that course, cause it does really work on that. It works on that energy system and, that 1 minute all out effort. And like I did it last night, and it was the part of the midweek crit.
Uh-huh.
That they moved to Zwift in the winter, and they were on that course, and sure enough I got dropped, and so I love that one. I don't, Crit City's good. Crit City's a really good one for tests, like a 20 minute test. 8 laps on Crit City is a really good 20 minute proxy test,
right?
If especially you're fighting for that group, I find the pace stays fairly consistent through it, even though there's a punchy little climb there. And those are the ones that I like for sure.
I haven't gone back to Zwift. How was the, let's give midweek a little shout out. How was attendance for the race?
It was good. I was in the Bs. I am now a bottom B racer, which is really tough. but which is okay. It's motivating to get back to.
Are you saying there's sandbaggers in there?
No, I don't actually. It's funny. Andrew. So the guy who won the B race was Andrew Pinfold, who was a former professional road racer for years. Like one of, I'm sure he won nationals at some points. And so he won the B race. And I was like, sandbagger. But I looked at the power charts and stuff, and it was within range of,
yeah.
But that's a funny course because you actually, the anytime you're on the flat, it's actually pretty chill. People figured out that course. Everyone's trying to recover, everyone's trying to save energy. And then it's an all out. So if you look at the 1 minute powers, they're pretty high. That's the big,
yeah,
distinguisher there, not the FTP. And even in the A race, it wasn't a high FTP type effort.
Okay.
It was all about having that 1 minute power.
Do you want to share with us what your 1 minute power was for that?
Oh, mine was, I think high 300s.
Okay.
I was also on the rollers.
Okay. That's great for rollers.
So, which I have resistance, not an excuse for low power because I'm on rollers by any means, but I find that it can be a little bit tougher to, because you can't really get it, it's a little bit harder to get out of the saddle,
yeah,
and be controlled. You're a bit more in the saddle for fear of flying out of off the rollers. I was maybe high 300s or so. That's the type of effort that I need to do a little bit more of. Those 1 to 3 minute intervals would help me a lot.
All right, fair enough.
But the tennis was good. I think there was almost 60 Bs.
That's excellent.
And there was probably maybe 30 or 40 As. So I think good attendance.
Shout out to Midweek, putting on,
yeah,
a good program.
Yeah, and actually shout out to Midweek. They moved it earlier in the night, which I like.
Okay.
Because they were, it was, the last couple of years it was like 7:30 at night.
Okay.
And it's like, I, everyone's different, but I'm like, I like to kind of be chilling out by after 7, right? So,
that's fair.
And some of them were a little bit long, so you'd be racing till like 8:30, and I couldn't sleep after.
Right.
So, they moved them up to like 6:15.
Okay.
Which I like.
Nice.
So that's cool. So, shout out to Midweek there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Another key winner thing for us, nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any thoughts rolling around in your brain about nutrition for the winter? Mm-hmm. Or just in general?
Yes. The one thing I'd say about nutrition and training and strength and you know, I should lead every time I'm on here is beware of trends. Beware of the next new thing. And I know I've gone down these, we all do, but, you know, I don't want to throw anything out under the bus, but, you know, keto. So, like, things like that. Like, just beware of the new diet, the new thing.
Right.
Don't be the first person to jump on board 2 feet in. You know, nutrition can be very... Nutrition's complicated, but at the same time, I think 90% of it's very simple. You know, you want to work on that first 90% of nutrition and then start dialing in those extra little bits. Just like with training, just... like with strength training, you know, are you eating enough for training and racing? That you know, if not, then what you eat's not really going to matter. So I always like to think about, and if I was to put my philosophy there, is that the what you eat and when you eat is going to be a little bit more important than the exact calories that you eat or the exact proportions of what you eat. If it's like 30% this, 30% this, 60%, like those kinds of things. I think our bodies are smart, and sometimes when we try to like trick them, it can backfire on us. So I, you know, what's the content makeup of your food? You know, what's your food log look like? Is there lots of fruits and vegetables? Do you have carbs in there? Because we're athletes, and if you want to go fast, you need carbs. And you know, do you have enough protein in there? Things like that. Do you have a little bit of protein with every meal? You know, those basics, tackle those first and then start maybe experimenting a little bit more and dialing in, you know, if you did want to start counting calories, but make sure that, you know, what you're eating is good, healthy, nutritious, whole foods. I know whole foods is a bit of a buzzword, but it's true. Like if you eat 2,000 calories of junk or 2,000 calories of really healthy, nutritious food, you're going to be a different person. You're going to be, your health is going to be different. And I think that's the key thing, is eating for health. And then start to, you know, worry about supplements or, you know, are you taking fish oil or, you know, X, Y, or Z. So
if I could use an analogy, there's no quick fix. This is very much like the fighters who put on a bunch of garbage bags and run on a treadmill. Yes, you will lose 20 pounds in a day, but there are consequences. You cannot get it for free.
Yeah.
Fair to say?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so I, you know, if I'm an athlete who wants to work on nutrition, you know, the first thing I try to get them to do is just send me a food log. Just be really honest with a 3 to 5 day food log. What are you eating? They don't need to weigh food. They don't need to like exact measurements. Just what are you eating? Like,
right.
You know, what are the things that you are ingesting? And, you know, make sure that's looking good, that there's a range of food in there. Making sure that protein with every meal, things like that first before you go any further.
Right.
That's always kind of step one.
And is it okay if we have been super diligent through our season? Are we okay to go out and have a slice of pizza?
Yeah, absolutely. So I always think too that you want to be diligent, but at the same time, I think it's, you know, if you want to, it's better to have a cookie every few days then at the end of season, all of a sudden eat 5 bags of cookies in a week, right? So sometimes it's okay to, I think, have those little indulgences throughout the season. I you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think we have to be monks through the season. We just want to be pretty good. But if you want to have a glass of wine, want to have a beer, you're okay.
Yeah.
You know, don't deprive yourself of certain things and then binge on them later on.
I think fairly fair to say most of people listening to this aren't in the pro elite cyclist category. Maybe a bit of a different story if you're chasing that dream of pro, you got to watch a little tighter. But at the end of the day, we want to enjoy our cycling, we want to enjoy our life.
Sure, absolutely. And I think most cyclists are pretty good at that.
Yeah.
I went to a end of year cycling club party in Toronto, and it was at a brewery, and there was a lot of beer being drank. And actually, they meet there at the end of every ride, and they have beer. And then, so it's like, you know, I think they're pretty good with it. Having, not even me as an athlete, but, you know, having lived with, been on the national team, been on the World Cup circuit with a lot of really good bike racers throughout the years, I can say everyone keeps it pretty simple. Like, there's no magic to how those, you know, Jeff Kabush, Catherine Pendrell, Derek Sandstra, like all these people that I, you know, trained with and spent time with and traveled with, they just ate well. But there's no magic to it. They were just happy people fueling themselves.
Yeah.
If you're a professional cyclist, and it depends on what your lifestyle is a little bit too, you might be a little bit more diligent. But I think food's something that we should, it's to nourish our bodies with, and how it helps us recover and all those things. So we just want to make sure that 99% of it's good. But if we have the odd bowl of Ruffles, and we have the odd bowl of Ruffles.
I follow a fair bit of Canadian, I'll call them pros. I believe they are pros or elite cyclists. And I often see coffee stop shops with pastries and the whole bit. So mm-hmm. fair ball for if they're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
In moderation, of course, but
absolutely.
I mean, it happens, right?
Yeah.
How was cross? This is a dirty word for you, but how was cross season this year?
Oh, boy.
You're not normally a fan of cross weather, per se. Is that correct?
Correct, but it's not the racing. I don't mind I'll race in any conditions enjoy racing in any conditions. It's the kind of before and after.
Okay.
That's like, I'm like, I just get tired of it as a bike racer. Just like, you finish a cross race, it's 2 degrees and snowing, raining, and you're hypothermic, and it's like, I don't know if this is fun right now, right? And you're trying to change, but you have frostbite in your fingers. And but this year was great. It was oddly enough, my partner Nicole was super into it. She was, cross. And I was like, whatever, cool. I totally thought that I was going to be supporting her through the whole thing. Like,
right.
Like, we're going to go every race, babe. And I'm going to like hold the umbrella for you and cheer for you. And like,
yes.
You know, all those things. And then it kind of turned it like, just, you know, the way it turned out in the calendar and different things. I think I raced almost every weekend and Nicole only raced a few races. And then kind of by the end of the season, she was like, yeah, it was provincials. And she's like, no, you're good. I'm just going to go hang out with my friend. I'm like, and I was like, oh, I got kind of hooked into this again this year. So, I loved it though. It was great to be back. It was a short condensed season this year. I think we had 6 or 7 weekends, and because those are the organizers that were willing to, back in August, July, when things were still pretty uncertain, we're like, we'll run something.
Yeah.
And so kudos to them, big shout out. And I'd say all the races were great. I missed Brockville and Nathan Challen's Cowbell
Cross. Okay.
Because that was the same weekend as Mountain Bike Nationals.
Okay.
And I have no doubt they were great races. I'd say all the courses are, you know, great this year. Really fun courses. A lot of, not just a series of 180 degree corners, but like you can really play around the lines, and like it was great. Yeah.
So the only one that I did, so maybe we can have a bit of a digest on this. So I did the Toronto Cross, my first time getting down to the big city for
And that's quite cross. The one to pick too.
I feel like it was.
Yeah.
I was early morning and it was a bit greasy on the downhills. How was it? You're obviously later in the day.
Yeah.
How was it by the time I rolled around?
So this year, all the races were pretty dry this year, or they got drier as the day went on. So Toronto was no different. So when I got there, it was a sunny, windy day, which is perfect recipe for course gets drier and better. So yeah, it was pretty good. That one kind of muddy chute that I think was almost under one of the tee bars.
Yep.
It was still wet. That was the wettest part of the course, but it was very manageable. And I kept it simple this year, and I just had one set of wheels and one set of tires, and they're mud tires, just so I could ride anything and not have to worry about it. So from that perspective, I was good. But that was a pretty good course.
Yeah. Well, let's talk some tech then. What's the tread pattern? What are you with?
I was on the Vittoria Torino wets, I believe there are.
Yeah.
I just wanted to not have to think about that stuff this year. I have my cross bike. It's very simple. It's a couple years old. And I just threw on those mud knobbier tires so that I knew that I could show up to race and race anything. And yeah, I know that with where my fitness is, that my bike and my tires are the last thing holding me back. So, you know, if it was a slightly faster day, I am not going to blame my knobby tires and not having filed treads or anything like that.
That's fair.
That's fair.
And the run up at the back of the hill.
Yes.
How was that by the time you, when I raced it, it was very slippery.
Okay.
And it was really hard to get a foothold sort of in the morning.
It was good. There was pretty much steps that were kind of carved into it. So thank you.
Yeah. That's what it seemed like sort of as my race went on, it was getting drier because the sun was kind of coming around that side.
Yeah.
And you could see it was going to form up, I thought, pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, traction was never an issue on that. A few of the younger guys were riding up it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. My gears are too big to ride up it. That's my excuse. it was pretty good. So, I love that course at Centennial because it actually went back. It had almost a little bit of single track in there. I know it's a dirty word in cross, but
yeah.
And it was actually a lot like Centennial had cross nationals. I think it was 98.
Okay.
And it was one of my first cross races, and then I actually went through that same little forest.
Okay.
So it was actually a lot like that. So it was a bit nostalgic racing back through there. Nice. But it was cool. They had a really good mix there. Yeah.
I thought they did an excellent job, and I think I saw an announcement that they've secured that site for next year as well. So
yeah, it's part of the master plan now. So which should hopefully be good for 5 years, I think, is usually what those plans, 5 to 10 years. So yeah, Midweek and Michael Longfeld, I think, really championed it, made sure that cycling was a protected use of the park.
Excellent.
I actually tuned in for one of the meetings. I don't know if it was a city hall. It wasn't like council. It was like, you know, a subgroup of council. And Michael was on there, and he did a great presentation. And so I think they voted and said, yeah, that's good use of the park. And because it's a great venue in Toronto. It's, you know, almost a bit of a rarity. It's got great parking, chalet. It's a very large park. So, you know, we can kind of slice off a bit of it for a Sunday for a race, and there's still tons more space for people to go walk and go enjoy their day. So, and I'd say all the pedestrians and dog walkers and stuff, they always come over and kind of check it out, and never seems to be an issue there. So,
yeah,
which is, you know, I've seen other city parks where, you know, we kind of take over the whole park.
Yeah.
And it can cause a bit of you know, conflict would be a strong word, but it can, some
disruptive
tension.
I saw quite a few people walking around in the morning and kind of looking and like, what is this? And then there was other people, onlookers, and they would explain it to people going by. And
but it's a neat park because there's a little bit of everything there. Like, I think there's a golf course nearby. They have like this big concrete pad where they do the airplane races. Like they're on string.
Oh.
These guys have these like planes. They're, I don't know if they're electric or gas. And they stand in the middle of this big concrete circle, and they launch them, and then they race them.
Oh.
But they just go in circles because they're holding them on a string.
Hmm.
And so anyway, they got that there. They got disc golf. They got the Pan Am BMX course. In one end of the park. So yeah, it's a pretty neat little spot. And then I guess in the winter it's a ski hill.
Okay.
If they have snow.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Toronto currently does not.
Yeah. I thought it was illegal to snow in Toronto.
If someone knows, if someone's listening and knows what the airplane thing's all about, please get in touch.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what that's all about.
It was wild.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Winter plans for you?
Nothing too out of the ordinary. I've gotten back myself into a little bit of training, trying to get on the bike 4 or 5 days a week now, and coaching a few new athletes. So that's going really well. A lot of athletes kind of coming back from some break after the season. And then I have one trip planned down to Arizona.
Oh, that sounds spicy.
February.
Yes.
We'll see. My partner saw a good seat sale on WestJet. So we just kind of like within 5 minutes, we had tickets to Phoenix because it was too good a deal not to book it. So, but we have a few other friends going down. Bevan.
Legendary planner, lapdog, yeah. Bevan.
Bevan.
Has he already been route planning?
Yes, he has. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I would expect no less.
Darcy and Nicola, another person another one of Nicole's friends. So
excellent.
Yeah, so it's kind of some of the Sedona crew for sure.
Nice.
So yeah, we're going to Tucson.
And you're actively training. Is there something you have your eyes set on next year? Nationals possibly?
Yeah, nationals. Uh-huh. That's kind of the, yeah.
And we can't talk about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I got my eye on for sure. I don't know how much racing I'll do next year as a whole, but nationals for sure.
Because nationals will be here at Hardwood.
That's
correct?
The plan. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And nationals, we kind of glossed over that. You went to nationals this year.
Yeah.
How many years was that for you? 20-ish?
Yeah, it's over 20 now. So I think that was my 22nd mountain bike nationals. But 21st in a row, because there was one year that I missed way back in the 90s.
Right.
But yeah, that was, and I think it's something like 18th or 19th elite nationals.
Okay.
In a row. So
how was your race?
It was okay.
Okay.
So this is where the training comes in.
Uh-huh.
Because I was last. And hey, somebody's got to be last.
Wait a minute. Were you last on the last lap? Or?
Well, no. So okay. I was like, we started the race and I, was like, okay, I gotta really ride within myself. Like, stayed out of trouble on the start. There's a little bit of, somebody snapped a chain and some bars bumped and stuff, but I was last, other than I guess the guy fixing his chain, Raf. But so that was an eye-opener. This is humbling. And then partway through the race, and then the U23 start catching up because they started about a minute, 2 minutes behind. And my goal is to not get in their way.
Sure.
The last thing I want to do is mess up a U23's race. So So I was doing okay. Like, big goal was, finish on the lead lap. But then it was pouring rain. And I actually realized I haven't really ridden in rain or mud for, 2 years. Like, I can't remember the last time I rode, in those conditions. Yes. So maybe the Mountain View Enduro in last October. So it was pretty slick, and it was fun. But I kind of got sideways on a wooden bridge and came off of it and broke a good little bail, broke my shifter.
Mm-hmm.
So that I couldn't shift into a harder gear. It would only shift up into an easier gear.
Oh.
So I had to, and I did that once, and then I realized, I'm like, okay, I can't shift anymore, because if I go into my 50, I'm done. Right?
There's a walk.
So I was single speed for a lap and a half. Which was interesting because I was just never in the right gear, and then got pulled after 3 laps, I think.
This is where high cadence comes into play.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was like going, anytime it was flat, I was just like spinning, and I don't think the people in the tech zone really knew what happened. Like, they were like, what's he doing? Like, because yeah. I was literally going through at like 120 RPM.
Right.
And they were like, shift. Use your shifter. Like, like, and yeah. So,
I've been doing this a while. I know.
Yeah. So that was, so it was like, I was spun out on the flats. It was too big a gear to climb in. But what really bugged me about the gearing was just in the middle sections, like I just couldn't accelerate out of anything. It was just in too light a gear.
Right.
So anyways, yeah, I ended up getting pulled. Yeah.
That's racing.
Yeah, that's racing. So went out there and tried, and it was awesome. That was a really neat experience. First time being out of the province for the past 2 years or past couple of years, and they did an amazing job putting that on, and there was a ton of people there, great vibe. So yeah, it was really good. Nicole went out and raced as well. She raced in the Quebec time trial the next day.
Cool.
And had a great time. She was on the podium, so
nice.
Yeah, it was a good trip out there. And yeah,
and did you get to watch the women's race?
I was able to see a good chunk of it, but then
it was before or after?
It was before.
Okay.
So they raced just before the men. So, you know, I obviously watched the start, but then you got to go warm up.
Sure.
Right. So I'd kind of warm up for a bit, kind of come by at a few spots in the course where I could kind of, you know, see where people are. Like right away I was kind of like, yeah, Jen's going to win this barring something. Like it was, you know, so yeah, Jen had an amazing race. That was her first UCI win a few years ago, and she's always raced really well in that course.
Yeah.
So I knew that if, once I saw her out front on, after the first lap, her and Lori had like huge gap on Sandra and Catherine. I was like, okay, yep. She's probably not going to give that up unless flat, yep. You know, something.
Sure.
But, yeah, she was pretty dominant there.
And special to see Catherine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I know obviously you didn't get to watch the whole race, but,
yeah, that was the first time I saw Catherine racing in person, since for a couple of years at least.
Yeah.
We haven't said the C word yet. I don't know if we said the C word yet, but, cause they've been off racing in Europe the whole time, right? That's where all the racing was. It was all over in Europe, a little bit in the States. So we didn't have a lot of national series racing here, or at least where those riders would come back. So it was, it was neat seeing Catherine do her final professional nationals. I did see today that she's now a national team coach.
I did see that.
So I don't know what that, like, you know, I'm pretty sure she was planning on doing a little bit of racing here and there, like, but I'm not sure what that entails now, because if she's a national team coach, then maybe she won't be racing. But
yeah, who knows? Be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
And we're into some exciting times for mountain bike, I guess cycling in general. End of contracts for people be moving around, so stay tuned to social media and see where see what happens with everybody. This is kind of silly season, and you got to try and keep track of who's riding for who.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. On both the mountain bike and the roads, there's a lot of movement, a lot of shifts going on. That's normal post Olympics. And especially this year with it being pushed back another year, I think a lot of contracts got extended. It'll be interesting to see. I'm really looking forward to a more normal, race season next year. And for all disciplines, and getting a little bit more racing back in Canada and Quebec, and I think that'll be nice to see a bit more balanced calendar.
And are you looking at, because your focus is nationals, will you be throwing on race plate a little more regularly next year, do you think?
I will race regularly. I don't know if I'm going to do. I raced a lot this year, actually. It's funny. I don't know why. I love racing bikes, and
you don't need to apologize for that.
Yeah, it's. I don't know why. I just, it's what I love to do, and you know, whether it's fit or not fit or mid pack, last, first, I just love racing bikes. So, but practically, you know, it's sometimes it adds up financially, and also want to make sure I'm you know, an effective coach as well. But this year was fun because it was a lot of downhill racing, enduro, and things like that. We didn't have a lot of races, you know, quote unquote big races to worry about. So, but next year, hopefully with things normalizing, I might be a bit more on the sidelines at some events. But I'll still find a few races to do. I think Dan's going to do a couple early season mountain bike races, like Turkey Point.
Sure.
It's me back. So that was fun. So I'd love to do that one. O Cup here and there. I'll probably be very selective of the races I do next year. I'm not going to do a race just because it's a race.
Right. And just to cover off this year, just the wide range that's out there, you did Mountain Lives, Nine Live, Mountain
yep.
View, Nine Lives, Enduro.
Yep.
So a bit of an uphill. You did uphill and downhill, correct?
Yes.
Proper Enduro.
Yeah.
You did Horseshoe.
Yep. I did the Horseshoe. I did some of the Wednesday night races.
Yep.
And then I did their Horseshoe Bike Fest. I forget if that's what they call it.
Yep.
Bike Fest in September. So I did the pump track race, the dual slalom race, and the enduro that they had there that weekend. So, which was fun.
Did a heap of cross races.
Yeah.
What am I missing?
Cross country, mountain bike cross country races.
Yes.
The O Cups.
Yeah.
Did in a couple Mountain View weekly series races as well. Took part in, it wasn't, I didn't race it, but I did the Scary Fast 200 up north of Huntsville, which was Angry Johnny's race, which was awesome. Nicole, my partner, and I did, like, we were like on bike sweeps.
Yep.
So we rode it, but it, you know, still kind of felt like an event away from home.
Sure.
But that was a pretty cool event as well. So
nice. That's it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice.
I think so.
And you're gonna try and stick to that sort of regime for next year.
Yeah.
Keep some downhill in there. Just keep it fun.
A little bit of downhill, and I'll probably do. I'd love to do a gravel race next year. I didn't quite get one in this year, but I saw. I've seen Dan's plan for next year, and he's got some cool ones planned. So yeah, it's a cool one planned this year as well. I did the Sausage Suit ITT too.
Right.
The day before Cross Provincials. So I did that on the Saturday and then Cross Provincials on the Sunday. So yeah, hopefully do one or two of Dan's gravel races next year as well. So
nice.
Yeah, there was a lot of overlap this year too. Because like,
condensed season.
You know, it was September was, there was several races on every day it seemed like.
Yeah.
So hopefully with it kind of spreading it a little bit more, I can, you know, pick and choose a little bit more of those other events.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get you out of here on some Bell Lab questions.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Favorite type of milkshake.
Oof. I don't even know. Like, I can't remember the last time I had a milkshake. Chocolate.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an
answer.
Yeah.
I'd probably go chocolate. Yeah. Yeah.
I know.
Lando. What are you doing? Lando just wants the answer too. who's the best dog in the world? Lando is.
No, not. Oh, you're making a peanut butter and jam. What flavor of jam are we going with?
I don't eat jam.
I'm sorry, what?
I don't eat jam. I am sans jam.
Okay.
Yeah.
So peanut butter and what then?
I would just go just peanut butter. Or peanut really? Butter and Nutella or... peanut butter and butter.
Butter and Nutella.
Sure.
I think you're going to cause some outrage. I think I'm going to get some emails about that.
Sure.
Coffee. How do you take it again?
Yeah, just black. Yeah.
Black. Okay. If you're going tea, what flavor tea?
Depends on the time of day. But either peppermint or chamomile.
Okay.
Are my two go-tos.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your go-to breakfast?
Probably bagel with PB on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And what is the What is your favorite song currently you've been listening to, or favorite band you're currently listening to?
Oof. It's a tough one. I don't know. I don't know if I'd like, I'm not sure. I just listen to the radio. Whatever's on the edge.
All right, fair enough.
Whatever the Edge 102 is playing. And I know they're notorious for playing 20 songs over and over on a loop. Okay. So yeah, whatever they're playing.
All right. And from Karis Reed, because it's her thing. What's your non-negotiable in a day? What do you have to do every day?
Oof. I should have known this was coming. That's a tough one.
Oh, see, I would have thought you were a coffee guy for sure.
Yeah, that's almost like too easy, but that's almost like not, that's, like, I feel like it's, that's almost like a medicinal thing, like something I have to do versus just something I do just for myself. Because I know, you know, it's,
yeah,
take time for yourself and, you know, that kind of thing.
You surf bike porn on, like, no, pink bike?
I think just non-negotiable is it sounds like cheesy, but just making sure I check in on training peaks with everyone. That's almost just, I always just have to make sure I have a little bit of time there to do that. I need 10 minutes to check in on, you know, email, even if it's not like a work day, even if it's a weekend, just 10 minutes to check in and check emails and check training and make sure everyone's, there's no fires put out.
Besides coffee, that would have been my second guess, because I know you're a numbers guy, and I know numbers guys like checking numbers on the regular.
Yeah, and sometimes even those ones, like those check-ins, a lot of times it's even the comments from the athletes.
Sure.
It's like sometimes like the numbers can sometimes wait. Unless it's like a test or like, you know, something big. But a lot of times it's just like kind of scanning comments, just make, okay, they did it. Okay, looks good. Okay, and I'll get back to it on a Monday or whatever and really get into the data. But because the good thing about data is it's there the next day, the day after. But sometimes the comments, it's, you know, making sure, you know, if a race didn't go well, you know, what's that athlete's headspace? And, yeah.
And I can't let you out of here without one of my favorite things that you do for the winter. Monday nights, you have already started your information sessions.
Yeah, yeah. I put them kind of on hold for the holidays.
Sure.
And then restart next year. And yeah, every Monday night at 7 o'clock, I do a webinar on various topics. And they're totally free. And they're on, I use like a Facebook stream to do them, so.
And Facebook, Andrew Watson Coaching.
Yeah.
And can folks watch it after the fact?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Always awesome to chat with you. Please check back. Yeah. Let us know how things are going.
I will.
And
thanks for having me.
Yeah. We'll chat soon. Thanks.
Thank you.
Once again, I want to thank Andrew Watson. I'd also like to apologize for if you heard extra noise of either a treat bag or tail wagging. That's a new addition to the household. Lando just trying to fit him in to this podcast process, which is why podcast was a little bit on hold for a while. Back now and hopefully steamrolling ahead. Thanks for your patience, folks. If you have any emails, send them to us. You have questions, we have answers. We're on the socials. You know how to get a hold of us. Thanks much. Have a great day.